We're live on Facebook. B, what's good, brother?
All right. What's happening?
Hey, thank you for joining us in the studio again today, man.
Yeah, man. It's always good to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this is episode 15 of By the Block with Brian Chavis, man. Super excited about that. So, hey, showing a level of consistency here, you know, just continually dedicated to putting out good content, man. And
yeah, man, the people are responding.
Absolutely.
To the content, man. I think people are ultimately that's what they're really looking for, man, is that, content.
Yep.
You know, that true, content that can, really only come from individuals that, have at some level experience.
Exactly.
Owning and operating and managing, thousands of units. I think, a lot of the content and stuff that we're talking about, especially from the book, I think it's resonating with a lot of individuals, yep. Man. We're just blessed to be here, man. That at the end of the day, we're just blessed to
absolutely
to be able to turn all this experience into something that people are really benefiting from.
Yep. We had a great coaching call today as well. Great coaching session. Got new members joining the Matrix, which is exciting. So it's continually growing.
Yeah. The multifamily matrix is, I'm really excited about where that is in 2020 and where we take it, because it's evolved from the, from its concept of me and you putting that together, several months ago. So, just to see it evolve and to be able to see the individuals that are a part of the matrix evolve as individuals, investors. I'm thrilled, man. I'm thrilled. We should be proud. You should be proud of what we've built, and where it's headed.
Yeah, I'm definitely proud. I mean, it's just continually getting better and better. So we've got some new features that we've added in. We're working on, adding in, some new features to our investment analyzer as well. So that's really exciting. Yeah. And, today in our podcast, what we're going to talk about, what you're going to be learning when you're listening along, we're going to talk about the letter of intent, why that's important throughout negotiation, but then also key contract points. So in your book, you've listed 12 different key contract points. I'd love for you to, take a moment to break that down when we get there. But this is a really cool part, really cool and exciting podcast, because this is a big part of the negotiation and, putting your deal together. So
absolutely.
So with the letter of intent, so after we've negotiated the deal and we submit the letter of intent, some people think that's like a binding contract. Why do we submit a letter of intent? And also, we know it's not a binding contract, but what's the importance of a letter of intent?
Right. Yeah. We know it's not a binding contract. The vast majority of our audience may or may not know.
That's true.
It's not a binding contract. What it is, it's just basically your with the letter, the title, your intent to purchase a property. There's arguments to be made. You can do certain things to your letter of intent to be taken more seriously. But I think at the end of the day, as you develop your track record, and most that are listening to the podcast might be seasoned. Or they may just be starting out. So let's talk about those who are just starting out and those who are seasoned.
Right.
For those starting out, the letter of intent is important that you really, are using a established document, and we have a copy of our letter of intent actually in the book, Buy It, Rent It, Profit. I'm not sure what page it's on, but you can go into the appendix and see.
Correct.
So there's no excuse for not having a well-drafted letter of intent, because there's one for free right in Buy It, Rent It, Profit. But really, to get those out, the idea of the letter of intent is to be able to put as many of letter of intents out on projects that you're interested in. Okay. And then, of course, obviously you want to be able to get the response back from the seller and move to the next phase, which is the PSA, purchase and sales agreement. And then that's when we can really get into, the next phase, which is, that you get into, which is that contract phase and, what that entails, because that's when things really get serious.
Exactly.
The letter of intent, it's not a legal binding contract. You can put as many of those out, that you want, you might get responded to at the end of the day. And I'll say something, you know, for me, that's important in a letter of intent. I usually typically never try to put a letter of intent out. You know, let's just say a property's, you know, being advertised for $10 million. Nowadays, a lot of commercial brokers are getting smart and they're doing what they call whisper price. Mm. They won't tell you what the price is, but they're like, you know, whisper price is around $5
million. Right, right.
You know, you might think it's only worth 3.8, but in the letter of intent, I'm not going to put, for me, I'm not going to put 3.8 million as my letter of intent. I want to be taken seriously and get into negotiations. So I'll put the letter of intent out for 5 million, what they're asking.
Okay.
Once I get into the contract, under contract, then that's a total different conversation. Then I begin to whittle away based on my findings of right. why I think the property is worth 3.8 truly, you know, with the underwriting, and send, we'll start sending screenshots over to the seller or the seller's representation of, you know, hey, this is what we're uncovering about the market. This is what right. we're finding, units being off market. You have pro forma that you can receive, you know, $1,200. We actually see that you know, if we listed at 1200, these units will be sitting vacant for 5 to 6 weeks. Lost the income, lost the lease income is X, Y, and Z. So really, you know, so you begin to start, you know, playing chess.
Right.
And then so you begin to uncover true facts, you know, whether those, you know, operating costs, and typically the operating costs are always higher than what the seller is advertising or the seller's representation is advertising. So as you begin to, you know, go through your due diligence process and the granular process, we'll get into that.
Okay.
But that's when you begin to really, identify the price point
right.
that you want to pay for the property. But my point to this whole thing was, in the letter of intent, I'm not really offending you. So if you say it's worth $5 million, it's worth $5
million. Right, right.
Okay. We're going to get to the bottom of it
yeah.
if we go into contract. So, but, you know, I'm not offending anyone. I'm Got not it. Putting in a letter of intent, lowballing.
Yep.
You know, for me, I just never thought that technique works. And some might, you know, I'm lowball everybody, you know, and some may say it's not really lowballing. It's really the value. But this, you know, the one thing people have to realize is a seller's idea of value is maybe not always realistic to what's going okay. on in the market. So, you know, I'm not going to offend you.
Right.
I'll get it under contract, and then I'll present my findings after my due diligence period. And I'll say, hey, I found that it's really worth 3.8 based on my findings. And then from there, you know, we may have an opportunity because my findings are solid. We right. may have an opportunity to do a deal, and we may not have to, or we may have to walk away. Some may argue that, well, Brian, your process is actually just dragging out, you know, why go through 60 to 90 day due diligence
right.
and you're really only offering 3.8. I would have just offered 3.8 up front. And then if they had said no, they said no. And there's something to be made for that argument.
Of course.
But I would rather get you under contract, get you in the mindset that this thing will close, and get you into that mindset to where you're feeling comfortable that, hey, yes, this property is under contract. We're going to have this particular project sold. And then for me to start, you know, whittling you down versus offend you right up front, and I may not have an opportunity, especially if I feel like it's a good value add play or a good opportunity. You know, I don't want to be offensive in the beginning. I want to get you into negotiations, begin to build that relationship, and then really try to, you know, get you to see the light.
Absolutely.
You know, and then if the deal doesn't pan out, it doesn't pan out. But also, my argument would be, you know, if my due diligence process is on point, then, you know, really, you know, we begin to, you know, it's not going to take me 90 days to uncover right. all of this. Right. So, you know, it's really not 90 days worth of work. You know, I might begin to start having these conversations within day 5 or 6. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, like I said, arguments can be made on both sides, but I just feel like, you know, out of experience, this has worked for me, not to offend anybody, but to begin to put it under a contract and then show facts. And then, you know, let them come back and tell me, oh, no, right. this is why, you know what I mean? Because now you know, this is, the numbers don't lie. You know, now you have to tell me why, you know, I should overpay for this particular project. When we're looking at the numbers and they blatantly show that you have an inflated price, now you have to, you know, not based on emotion, but now based on facts, you have to tell me why you feel like this property is valued at the price point that you put it at.
No, that makes perfect.
Is it because you just hired a commercial real estate broker who's put together this fancy packet and, you know, you got to pay for those fees? You know, typically that could be the problem. And not to knock any commercial brokers out there. You know, we big shout out to all of our commercial brokers. We love them. They do an excellent job. But let's just be honest. Sometimes you have to pay for those. They're not getting into this game for free. You have to pay those commissions. And those commissions usually hike up the price. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this is the reality that any investor is gonna, you know, has to deal with, unless you're finding these properties wholesale or directly to the seller. So, you know, this is what we're faced with as investors. So, absolutely. You know.
No, I love the thoroughness. And, you said something in the coaching call today is that you need to be quick, but don't hurry. And that's really important as we continually week after week, we go through this podcast. Our goal is to help you guys buy it, rent it, and profit. You know, yeah, there's, you know, you're sending out this letter of intent. You don't want to get too hasty and you got to be thorough because these are things you're going to be holding for a while.
So. You know, everyone's goal is to do a project.
Of course.
In the first quarter of the year.
Correct.
Right? Everybody wants to post a number.
Right.
You know, Coach Wooden used to always say, be quick, but don't hurry.
Right.
And so that's something, you know, that I didn't get it directly from Coach Wooden. I've got it from a watered down version from my other coaches, you know, but in my years of playing, you know, that's something we often heard. Be quick, but don't hurry.
Correct.
And that's, you know, really that's, you know, you have to adopt that philosophy. I want to do a deal just as bad as the next person, but I'm not going to put my investors at risk, right, or ourselves or my reputation at risk because I want to put a number or post a number and put it up on the board.
Yeah.
You know, to show everybody or to do a deal. So, you know, at the end of the day, you have to be thorough in what you do, and you have to make sure that, you know, one of the things we talked about in the coaching call today was you got to make sure that, you know, you're not going to catch a dropping knife.
Exactly.
There's a lot of things happening, you know, that may be happening. We have a new election. You know, we have an election coming up. Negotiations with China, you know, it's like one day, it seems like it's very, you know, turbulent. You know, all this affects, you know, the economy, and then, right, you know, what affects the economy typically affects a certain demographic or psychographic that is your prospect tenant.
Exactly.
You know, and you know, depending on the asset classes that you're operating under, and you know, this could have, you know, major effects on your prospect tenant's demographic. Ideally, you know, if whatever affects your tenant affects the net operating income, whatever affects the net operating income affects the value of your asset. So at the end of the day, you know, you have to forecast, and no one wants to get caught dropping, you know, get caught with with catching a dropping knife. So you just have to make sure that, you know, that, you know, you want to be quick, but you don't necessarily want to hurry into a project. You want to dot your I's and cross your T's.
Absolutely. And before we get into the contract points, I'd like to take a moment to just mention our sponsors. This podcast is actually sponsored by Buy It, Rent It, Profit, the best-selling book from Brian Chavis. It is a international bestseller. You can find it in bookstores at Amazon. You can find it on. You can find it in Barnes & Noble.
Target, Walmart.
Yeah, make sure you grab a copy of that. And this podcast is also brought to you by The Multifamily Matrix. That is our weekly training and coaching segment where we are, you know, working with you in a group setting to help you reach all of your goals. So please join us each week. We have our coaching calls on Thursdays at 10 a.m. It's multifamilymatrix.com. We hope that you can join us in the Matrix. And so as we and actually we do have a giveaway for you. So if you go to brianchavis.com/LOI, we have a sample letter of intent form for you. So go to brianchavis.com.
Awesome.
LOI. We love giving out free stuff. So we've got that for you as well. In your book, it's like page 70. You talk about the contract phase. And so, you know, you've got 12 contract points on here, and I wanted to have you take me through these. So purchase price, clearly stating the purchase price in your contract. Why is that important?
You know, I mean, for obvious reasons, right. You know, because now it's a contract. So now we have to get to the purchase price. So, you know, you just want to clearly state, and that, you know, again, that's probably, you know, one of the least, you know, it's like, oh, that's, you know, that's nothing critical, but you'd be surprised. It is, you know, you want to make sure that you have the right price, because once you enter into the contract and you put your money and money goes, you know, the clock ticks to go hard. You want to make sure all of your I's are dotted and T's are crossed. So you want to make sure you have the right amounts. And so I liken it to things that you just, but that's obvious. But you'll be surprised how many times people put obvious legal notices, and I liken it to when you do a 3-day notice for a tenant. You know, some people may misspell the name on the lease or on the, you know, on the legal form, right? But you look on the lease is spelled BRYAN, but in a hurry, you spell on the 3-day notice the name BRIAN.
Got it.
Well, it can get thrown, the 3-day notice to vacate could get thrown, or for non-payment of rent could get thrown out of court because of that. So just some small things like, oh, you know, things you think, you know, are obvious.
Right.
Sometimes can come back to bite you in the butt. So just making sure that you understand, you know, what price point is in, you know, that you're not hurrying and you're putting a correct, you know, dollar amount. Because you know, when you're talking about $15, $20 million multifamily deals, sometimes that decimal, I'm dyslexic.
Right.
So sometimes that decimal, you know what I mean? You know, yeah. You know, more than one decimal can confuse you. So you just want to make sure you're putting the right.
Absolutely. I mean, and these are life-changing numbers that, you know, so you definitely, once again, quick, but don't hurry. Mm-hmm. Make sure you slow down and go comb through these correct. 12 points.
Correct.
So number two, you listed that it's a minimum of a 30-day due diligence period. Why are we doing a minimum of 30 days to do due diligence? That seems like a long time.
Oh, well, I'd prefer 90, but, you know, and try to close in 30 and get
right,
it done.
Right.
I'd prefer to contract under 90.
Okay.
Because, you know, you just never, you know, at the end of the day, everyone wants you to rush.
Right.
You know, we just put a project together and, you know, can you rush the, the due diligence period? I think you remember. Absolutely not. You know, can you think you can close within, you know, more than, you know, absolutely not. This particular portfolio consisted of, you know, of some older units.
Correct.
You know, older apartment buildings. Absolutely not.
Right.
But that's what they want you to do. The seller's representation, you know, not to paint a lot of our commercial brokers in a bad light. That's not what we're talking about. But I'm just being realistic on this podcast. That's what we're here to do.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of people want you to rush. Let's get this thing done under contract. That's how they get paid, by putting numbers up. But at the end of the day, you can't allow anyone to rush your process.
Right.
No, we're going to walk each and every one of these units. We're going to walk the interior, exterior. My maintenance guys are going to walk the units. My contractor's going to walk the units. We're going to do a forensic audit. We're going to get into that. But, you know, there's a process that we have, and we will not be rushed out of that process.
So. We will not be rushed.
Absolutely.
All right. So number three, you listed access to files, including leases. And I've seen you do this before. You know, as we were transitioning into the, you know, the more technological age, I remember the big file folders that you used to break out and,
You know, remember those, Nate?
Hey, man.
Amazing.
I was right on the tail end of that, but I saw it. We sat down with lease after lease, combing through it. So tell me more about that. You know,
and you still got to comb through the leases with the technology. Yeah, I mean, I still want to see the actual lease. Yep. We might be logging into Buildium, and you know, we might be getting a PDF of all the leases, but we still got to comb through all the leases.
Yeah, I just wanted to stress that, because this is something you don't comb over. Like, you don't just brush over. So
correct.
Why is it important to have access to all
because
the files? Because
I want access to the lease.
Okay.
Because that's a contract. So if all hell breaks loose and I'm in court, the judge doesn't want your rent roll. The judge wants to see the contract.
Right.
So what the contract says is the truth.
Right.
Is, you know, is the gospel truth. So looking at a rent roll, you can have the dates, you know, of the lease.
Yep.
You know, a 7-month lease on the, or a 12-month lease on the rent roll, and a 7-month on the contract. So, you know, you can doctor up a rent roll. So I want to necessarily, you can doctor up a contract too, but I want to see the contract. What are you under? I want to see the signature of the ownership, management, and the signature of the tenant. And what does that contract say?
Right.
If that says 7 months, then that's the gospel truth. But sometimes the lease may not correspond with the actual rent roll.
Right.
And they do that because when you look at the rent roll, you want to see as much 12-month leases as you possibly can. If you can get away with it, then obviously you're getting over, because at the end of the day, 12 months means stability.
Right.
You know, so sometimes you might see some in there that are that the leases are actually gone month to month. They're okay. Rollover leases.
Yeah.
So they're actually, if the vast majority of the leases have gone month to month and you didn't catch that, you're walking into a particular project thinking you have 7 to 12 month solid leases.
Wow, okay.
And some of these leases are month to month. And then people may not like you and your new management style, your new, you know, rules and regulations that you're coming with, because typically that rubs people the wrong way. Especially when you're buying these value add projects, they're typically used to a management style that's not really, managing.
Right, right.
You know, so now you come in with your rules and regulations and your qualifying criteria. You've seen it at Park Plaza that I've just done. I'm coming in with the new rules, no smoking in common areas. Things like that rub people the wrong way. No bikes on the, in the walkways and things like that. It rubbed, certain people who wanted, to not adhere to a certain lifestyle that we wanted to portray at Park Plaza. So those folks started putting in their notices. Well, what if these folks are all month to month? They can put in a 30-day notice and really, no repercussion.
Right.
You're thinking you got a 12-month lease. You're like, oh, you can't put a notice in. You'll owe me through the duration of the lease. No, I'm month to month. No, you're not. Look at this rent roll. Oh, yeah, I am. Look at this lease contract that I have a copy of. So now you're, oh, man, I didn't catch that. No, you didn't, because you didn't do your forensic audit. So, it's just understanding that, the rent roll can say one thing, but the lease contract can say another. And then to go a step further, the lease contract can say something, but the bank statement can say something different. So now I got to check the lease contract with the bank statement.
Right.
First, I was checking against the rent roll with the lease contract. Now I'm checking the lease contract against the bank statement. And That's the final.
Man, you're going to make me rich, man.
Yes, sir.
All this knowledge that you're dropping, man. If you're listening to this podcast right now, I want you to just stop for a moment, hit the subscribe button, and leave a comment.
Please.
Leave a review.
Share with a friend or family
it's
that
ridiculous.
You want to build wealth with.
I mean, I'm listening to this, and I've been, honored to work with you for, years now. We're growing our portfolio, man, but it's amazing. I mean, the amount of free spreadsheets that don't work, all this misinformation that's being passed around. Please, subscribe and just lock yourself into some really, solid knowledge. But I'll keep it moving, man. I don't want to digress too much.
No, speak to the people.
We're
you're good. Good.
No, we're giving them the real knowledge here. So these aren't free. Free spreadsheets.
They're dropping bombs. I wish
we'll have it all labeled. But yeah, this is not some free spreadsheet you get in the Facebook group. This is real knowledge based on real actual management. So, if your deals are falling through because you don't have experience, make sure you, come to BrianChavis.com.
And that's something else that's important, because, you do see a lot of spreadsheets, but a lot of the spreadsheets are not properly calculating IRRs, are not properly calculating discount rates. And, there's a lot of things within the spreadsheet, and there's nothing, and I commend everybody. You put together a spreadsheet, you're doing your thing, it's great, but not even I leaned on my own understanding.
Absolutely.
I went to a private equity firm.
Correct.
And sought someone who specifically had a high level of experience in underwriting deals, first of all, and then had a high level of education.
Correct.
The individual was not only an accountant, had a master's in finance, have underwritten almost close to, $1 billion.
Correct.
Works for one of the largest, if I name the name of the corporation, I will, LG.
Yep.
Works for one of the largest private equity firms, in the world.
Right.
That's who I went to and said, put me together a model.
Correct.
And I tweak it, just an example.
Yeah.
Because I'm dyslexic. If it were for me, if it were up to me, everything would be color categorized. But it, he gave the model that is of the gold standard in the industry.
Right.
Then I started asking for like little enhancements, like, you know, give me my break even ratio on occupancy and things like that. Little add ons that I wanted to see.
Right.
Because as a property management mindset and asset manager mindset, there's certain things that even he doesn't see because he's an underwriter.
Right.
So, you know, then our model, as you can see, after we've underwritten, you know, four or five deals with it, began to evolve.
Right.
And I shot a quick, you know, home video with all of our dashboard of various different spreadsheets and shown how they all work together. But we'll do something a lot more, you know, on the big screen, a lot more detailed. But it's really important, yeah, that we look at these spreadsheets and we're all careful, you know, to make sure that we've got the right type of spreadsheet and the calculations are actually correct.
You know, as we're going through this and we understand the importance of, you know, submitting the right LOI, doing your due diligence, why would you take a free spreadsheet from someone and just trust that that thing is dialed in and then take that those numbers to investors or even take your own money for these large multifamily deals? I understand if you're going to go buy a car. Thank you for the free spreadsheet. Let me see if this car is worth something. But I'm about to buy a multi-million dollar property and I just took a free spreadsheet and someone handed
to analyze
to me.
It. Yeah.
Here you go, sir.
I mean, and you know, and there's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Let's just be really clear. So, cause I don't want to offend anyone, you know, that doesn't need to be offended.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
Okay. I repeat, there's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
But do your homework.
Yeah, send it to someone. Let them take a look at it.
Do your homework.
Right.
Run some simple calculations to make sure that, you know, that it's reporting correctly.
Right.
That you're getting correct, you know, because there's, and I'm not even smart enough.
Right.
And I'll get my guy to chime in.
Right.
But there was something on one of the spreadsheets that I sent to him.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I like this one. He sent back immediately and said, no, it doesn't calculate IRR incorrectly because it hasn't done certain something within Excel to be able to properly, and I forgot what he used or the term he used, but to properly calculate.
Right.
So I'll ask him what that term is and include it into this podcast and also into our live feed to Facebook. Mm-hmm. But there was something that you have to do to a certain calculation to get the right number.
Absolutely.
And that particular software spreadsheet wasn't doing it, and therefore the calculation was off.
Right.
When you're off in this game, even by fractions, you know, that can have, you know, a detrimental outcome. So it's just really important that we all understand, you know, that again, it's just like be quick, but don't hurry. Do your homework, make sure. And then every quarter, every so often, maybe every 2 or 3 weeks, you just run some simple evaluations through your spreadsheet to make sure everything is accurate before you continue on underwriting, because I do understand that sometimes spreadsheets can get, you know, have issues.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm no techie, but can have issues. So you just want to make sure that, you know, you're always constantly, you know, doing your, physical or, you know, on the check the spreadsheet, run some simple numbers, make sure the calculations are working correctly, and then begin to underwrite some more projects.
And I apologize for the digression. Really, honestly, man, guys, We're trying to make sure that we protect your investments, we protect your research, and so yeah, you know, when we talk about that, it's not meant to fire shots at anybody or anything of that nature. But let's get back into contracts. So we've gone through 4 points already. Next, you listed in the book that you should also gain access to the property's rent rolls and schedule. So this should also be in the contract. Why are we looking at rent rolls and schedules? Why is that an important part of the contract?
Well, you're scrutinizing to use to check against the lease. So for mainly for me, it's to look at the rental amounts, making sure that there's no concessions in there that I'm not aware of, making sure that there are no month-to-month in there that I'm not aware of, making sure that, you know, most tenants have paid on time, that are not in arrears too far behind. And, you know, that'll bring me to some other key points within the contract. But yeah, it's just to make sure that, you know, everything is in alignment, because you know, that rent roll should tell me everything. It should tell me when the tenant moved in, should tell me whether or not, you know, where they are in their lease term, whether or not they're month to month, how many months do they have. So if I see tenants that are coming up 3 months before their lease is due, they need to go into a spreadsheet that are into your new software building. They need to go into your alerting system to prepare to increase those rents and change those lease contracts, because now I want to get them on my lease. You're scrutinizing the rent rolls and evaluating the rent rolls. Again, we call this process a forensic audit.
Forensic audit. Love it. Love it. And then you also listed access to the property. Why is it important to have access to the property when we can just look at it online?
Yeah, you got to have get there, and you have to be able to check the interior, exterior. So when I show up, I show up with two teams. Team number one is maintenance and contractor. So they're going to go and walk every single unit. And take pictures, and then they're going to do their own report and come back at the end of the day. And then the second team is typically the property manager and asset manager, and they're going to do the forensic audit on the contracts, vendor contracts, review bank statements, review lease contracts. You know, we're going through everything that has, you know, as the contractually,
right,
cash flow wise, deal with the property. So we're looking at evaluating everything, and then we're using this information to be able to thumbnail our management, begin the process of developing the framework for our property management plan for that particular asset.
Right, right. Makes sense. No, I love it. And then security deposits. So why is this an important part of the contract as well?
Well, I mean, legally, you want to make sure, because you're going to be responsible for those tenants' security deposits. You know, and there's two places that you're going to be sued when you're in this business. That's going to be for, you know, security deposits, and you know, that's usually the number one reason, and then you know, the eviction process. But you know, one of the main reasons fair housing, not eviction. The number one is fair housing. Okay. Number two is security deposits. But security deposits far outweigh, you know, right now, you know, fair housing lawsuits for most.
Right.
So you want to make sure that you've dotted those, because you're responsible for that. So if you sign the contract and you go under contract and then you execute the contract, and then you find out that the owner walked away with all the security deposit money and you didn't collect it or have that in escrow, so that's on you now. Mm. That money is on you to replenish that escrow.
Wow. It's just all the responsibilities that go into, you know, taking over multifamily.
Absolutely.
So,
and that's probably the most important, because you're responsible now. So if they've left, and we'll talk a little bit more in one of the other, keys. But you're responsible for those security deposits. So, you know, you have to make sure that money doesn't walk away. So that money needs to be held in escrow with title. And you need to verify, you know, against the lease contracts that's the right amount. And, in the bank account. Because if it all totals up to, let's just use simple numbers, $200,000, you know, and there's only $175,000, you're responsible for that difference.
Absolutely. No, and this is all the type of stuff that I get to see working alongside you. You know, when we acquire properties, you know, we're out there managing them as well. So, you know, I can see the tenants' concerns for their security deposits or any the need to actually know exactly what's going on with that money.
That's right.
So number eight was when does the money go hard? And so why is this an important part of the contract as well? You put, like, you don't want to find yourself behind the eight ball. Why is it important to know when money goes hard in the contract?
Yeah, because that's your money.
Yep.
When that money goes hard, if you haven't done all your homework, you know, there's no going back. You know, that's no longer yours. So if you've got $250,000, $300,000 in escrow and you haven't completed your homework, or you've now found out you need to back out, that's a tough pill to swallow. So you want to make sure that, you know, again, that you've established a team. And if you've done anything, you've run through this drill 1,000 times, even if you haven't purchased your first deal yet or done your first deal, you and your team should execute mock due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand, you walk through the drills. You know, it may not be the real thing, but you're walking through the drills so mistakes are not being made on game day.
Right.
So, you know, I encourage everyone to do mock due diligence. You can take buy it, rent, and profit, and you can do a mock due diligence with mm-hmm. buy it, rent, and profit, the book. And I encourage everyone, you know, all your multifamily meetup groups, you guys should be doing that, you know, once a quarter, if not sometimes right. once a month. Just do a walk or a mock walkthrough of a due diligence just so you know who would handle maintenance. What would that process look like? If you looked at the video I just posted on Facebook right. this morning, you had the dashboard. I wish we could pull it up, but you had the dashboard, and we will do a video on this.
Yep.
But all of the dashboard that held all of my spreadsheets, we had a due diligence checklist, yep. and then another due diligence checklist that scored the property on a scoring perspective.
Right.
You know, rated a property 1 to 100. You know, so I mean, very detailed. So at the end of the day, you got to know who, you know, where are you gathering this information? Who's going to be on the team? What are you going to be checking when you're going through? What is maintenance looking for? What is the forensic audit team looking for? You know what I mean? You need to know this. You need to have walked through this several times. And whether it be in your head or in a mock situation, you need to have walked through this several times with your team. And sometimes your team is you, yourself, and I. You know what I mean? So, you know, you need to have put yourself through this. So when your time comes, you're ready to execute. So on game day, you execute as if you've been there 100 times.
Love you it, know? Man. Yep.
You're not looking like a deer in the headlight.
No.
You know, like you've seen some of these playoff teams, you know, they look good during the regular season. They get into the playoffs and they look like they've never been there before.
Correct.
You know, so, you know, there's something to be said about just drilling home fundamentals. You know, if you've ever played sports, you know, whether even at a peewee league or at a high level, you know, it's always drilling the fundamentals. It's always focusing on the fundamentals. If you ever been to a driving range of professional golfers, you'll see them laying down, you know, alignment aids and things right. like that. And you're looking like, why would, you know, because they focus on the fundamentals. Everything has, you know, when you're out there and you're golfing, you're playing, I'm an avid golfer. Mm-hmm. So when you're out there playing and things are not going well, the first thing you always do is fall back on fundamentals.
True.
And you also then fall back on prior experiences that you've had, you know, to be able to right the ship.
Right.
So just understanding that, you know, and if you don't have prior experience, this is why the mock is so important, or being in a group like the multifamily matrix is so important, so you can, you know, glean the knowledge from others.
Correct.
So you're able to, you know, if you can't get your own experience, gain the experience from others. So you're able to walk through this process several times. So when it's your time, you're ready.
I love it. Then number 9, you put built-in financing contingencies. So this is, you know, allowing yourself to back out of deals if you
just
can't.
Just protect yeah. yourself.
So tell me more about that. Like, why is that part of the contract?
Just really, again, to protect
yeah.
the group. You know, from getting into a project. And if I need to back out, I can back out without that money going hard.
Got it.
So it's just a way to protect yourself, a form of asset protection for the general partners going into a deal, to be able to have those triggers. And you want to sit down with your attorneys and make sure that your contract has several clauses, you know, based on financing, based on your ability to raise the capital. Because a right. lot of people may not be syndicating. They may have the capital, they may not. But for those who are syndicating or raising money per deal, you know, you have a time frame, let's say 7 days that you're trying to raise the money, and you might have 10 commitments.
Right, right.
Then when it comes time for you to go into contract, 3 of those commitments are like, oh, man, you know, I had a death in the family and, you know, I had to allocate those dollars. So, oh, you know, I find out that my brother-in-law needed, you know, the money to start his business. And so I lent him the money. So you no longer have those commitments. So you just want to make sure that you have some contingencies in place that protects you in case, you know, you're not able to execute.
Got it.
Where that money doesn't go hard.
I love it. Then we've got set aside escrow money for rent. And so this is something that's often overlooked. You wrote in the book. Why are we setting aside escrow money for rent?
Good. You know, this is one of the best keys.
Yeah.
Is because you might close somewhere in the 20th of the month, right? Right. The owner collects all the rent. You go under contract and the owner takes all that rent money and leaves. Now you're in the month of January and, you know, you're basically now giving away free rent.
Mm.
You can't collect rent until February. So, you know, you want to make sure that rent money for whatever month is closing is being held in escrow with the title company, your title company, their title, somebody's title company, that rent is being held. So whatever is being collected by the management company is being put into the escrow,
okay,
not to the seller's pocket.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. This is a lot of stuff. So
especially for the smaller operator, so you're anywhere under 80 units.
Yeah.
You're dealing with, non-institutional type of.
Yeah. You don't want to be stuck holding that bill.
You don't want to be stuck holding that back. So at the end of the day, and you see this happen, so, yeah. Not everybody's syndicating, 3,000 unit projects.
Correct.
A lot of our listeners might be doing their first 20 unit, first right. 80 unit. You right. know, these are the things where, you might not be dealing with a high level of sophistication when it comes to the right. seller's representation, the seller, maybe sometimes even the buyer. This might be their first deal or so. So, these things are really important, for me at all levels, no matter your experience. Sometimes this stuff gets overlooked as yep. well.
Absolutely. And we got one of our members in the Matrix. He's looking to buy his first 5 units. So mm-hmm.
yeah,
that's exciting.
At that level, it can happen.
Yeah. So we once again, we want to make sure that you're protected. Another one that you listed is equipment. So, why are we listing equipment in the contract as well?
Yeah, because, when you start looking at, bigger projects, even at the 20 and 80 units, right. equipment is going to be involved. So, the lawnmower, tools and things of that nature. So if there's certain things that you see that you feel that needs to be a part of that particular property, then you need to, to establish that in the contract.
Right.
I know I've done that when we bought Park Plaza. There was things, that I was like, no, that needs to come with the property. That needs to be associated with the contract. There was a thing, I think, one of the videos, one of the units didn't have a stove because they were going to turn it into an Airbnb and they just had the flat top thing. I'm like, no, this is a unit. This is you advertise this as a 22 unit apartment building, but yet this one doesn't have a stove. It needs to have a stove. So I had them put a brand new stove in there. So there's certain things that you'll want to look at, and it's not necessarily equipment, but this still falls, absolutely. Whether it's equipment or, any kind of items you feel like the property should have,
correct.
That it doesn't have. This is the time that where your contractors usually come back and say, hey, yeah, so-and-so unit doesn't have a stove, so-and-so unit doesn't have an AC, so-and-so unit AC is about to go out. You'll need to have them replace it. So there's a myriad of work orders that may be turned in that says to the seller, you've got to fix these things or you have to discount mm-hmm. me on the price.
Mm-hmm.
Roof repairs, we found this. Unit repairs, we found these items. Common area repairs, we found these items. Plumbing, we found these items. Electrical, we found these items. The security cameras are not operational. Mm-hmm. These are issues with the, we found these items. This needs to be bought up. So if it's there and it's attached to the property, we expect it to be fully operational.
Right.
Or for it not to be, or for us to have that removed off the price.
So when we took over a property in Tampa, there was a huge tool shed on the Humphrey Street. Mm-hmm. And so what about stuff like that as well? So is that something that should be
all those tools?
Well? Could say, oh, those are all ours. And,
If you expect as the buyer that those tools are going to be yours, and when you open up that tool shed that it to be full, then that needs to, you need to have that in the contract that everything in that tool shed belongs to you, lawnmower, tools, right. whatever it may be. Sometimes it doesn't, often it doesn't, the management yeah. takes that with them or the ownership takes that with them. But if that's what you want and you feel like that is, needs to be a part of the deal, then you need to specify that, it might be special equipment for an elevator, that is associated with it. So, it's not always, don't take for granted that item to fix that right. elevator needs to be left behind.
Right. And also you said in the book that, you want to ask, because it might be yours to keep or to throw away. So you might assume that they're going to take this stuff with them. And then you get there when you own the property, you have all this stuff that you have to toss,
mm-hmm.
So making sure who's going to get rid of what.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. On the reverse, yeah. on the flip side of the coin. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah,
man. Yeah. This is so extensive. So you guys, make sure you're paying attention and, join us in the Matrix as well. We're developing investors weekly. We're offering coaching calls. All of these resources, our spreadsheets, our analyzers are available to Matrix members as well. But the final key that you put on this is existing contracts disclosure. Why are we disclosing any existing contracts? Why is that a key part of the?
Yeah. So, you know, for example, when you're dealing with vendor contracts, you know, which ones you can get out of, which ones you can't.
Got it.
You know, so if you're in laundry contracts, you might want to come in and put your own laundry equipment in.
Right.
You know, it might make sense, you know, and own the laundry equipment outright. But when you buy the property, there might be a contract, you know, for the laundry equipment in place.
Right.
You know, or there might be a warranty for the roof.
Okay.
But in the contract, it says, you know, if this property is ever sold, the warranty is voided unless the new buyer pays X amount of dollars. You know, and then now you have to pay X amount of dollars. But if you're not reading through the contracts, you're not going through this, then you assume that if something goes wrong with the roof, you're like, oh, no, we're under warranty. This is a brand new roof. Call the contractor out here.
Right.
And the contractor's like, no, you owe us $12,000 because if you read in item 4.27 in the contract, it clearly states if the property or when the property is sold that the contract, if still under warranty, is null and void unless the new buyer pays, you know, some sort of assignment fee.
Got it.
So, you know, you have to read the fine print. If it's not in writing, then it didn't happen. So, you know, you want to make sure, you know, you read everything that's in writing. Read through all those vendor contracts.
Absolutely.
Comb through them.
Absolutely. Man, this was a doozy. So 12 key points.
I'm going to throw 13th in there.
Oh, go ahead. Unlucky throw it 13. In there. So, 13.
Sometimes I shot a video with this topic. Sometimes you're going to buy a property and there's going to be some delinquent, you know? So, you know, when we're looking at that rent roll, we see a few people that are delinquent. We didn't really go into it, but I want to drop this. If you find a few people that are delinquent in there, you don't necessarily want to inherit them. So you may be, but if there's a few individuals that you notice that are delinquent, and maybe even the month that you're buying the property, they're delinquent and you notice they're habitual. You may want to have the owner, the current owner, go ahead and file. Not may, you should have the current owner file for eviction.
Right.
For those tenants, like what we did. So when we take over the property, the eviction process is already underway, paid by the seller that's vacating.
Yep.
You know, but the process is already underway. Let them be the bad guys to evict. Let them deal with the headache of starting the process of the eviction process. So you know, you want to look at and make sure you're obviously delinquencies are really key in looking at when you're buying these properties, looking at your tenants that you're inheriting and look at how they pay, you know, and look at their history. Look at those ledgers. That's what we're going through is looking at the history of payment and looking at how they pay and making sure that, you know, that the individuals pay on time. And if they're not, they're habitual late payers, you may want to go ahead and get rid of them before you take over the property so it doesn't become your headache.
Love it. Love it. Man, thank you so much for, you know, breaking this all down for us. You know, as we are on our journey to buying properties and investing, you know, it's always great to have you in the studio, B, and dropping your knowledge. You know, as you say, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
Always king.
So make sure you guys tune into the podcast of the King with Two Eyes, Brian Chavis. And thank you so much, man. I look forward to speaking with you next week, brother. And
see talk you guys to you soon. Next week. And special news drop. We have the first conference that's going to be certifying individuals in property management, asset management, and multifamily evaluations.
Yep.
And syndications. We're going to be coming out with the CRIS, Certified Rental Investment Specialist.
Absolutely.
It's going to be the conference. It's going to be the place to be if you want to actually get a designation in this industry. If you're a licensed real estate professional or broker in the state of Florida, it offers CE credits by the state. So you know our courses have been approved by the state of Florida. So you know it's of high quality.
Exactly.
We are actually giving away the designations. Certified Rental Investment Specialist, that's going to give you the designation, the ability to show that you have knowledge in property management, asset management, multifamily underwriting, multifamily syndication. So, you know, you want to May 30th.
Go to brianchavis.com. You're going to get all the information. And so brianchavis.com, we're going to have all the information listed on our website, all the dates, all the times. And make sure you guys join us because we want to make sure that you get certified and It's going to be a great event. So make sure you guys go to brianchavis.com. We've got it. Once again, we got a free giveaway, brianchavis.com/LOI for that letter of intent. Once again, B, thank you so much for joining me in the studio, man, and dropping all this content, brother. Talk to you next week, brother.
Me, man. See you next week.
All right.